Okay. So in God's wonderful world, we say that this is the best of all possible worlds, a discussion of Sadya Gaon in Yeshayahu chapter 5 about the kerem, the vineyard that represents mankind. God created us with the Yetzer Hara that affords us free will but causes all kinds of problems. Right? All the problems in our world are man-made. Really, the tsunamis and the comet that might destroy some significant percentage of life. I mean, some of those things we didn't cause, right? So, of all the things that you might look at, is this really so? Can a person live a long life and his children don't even bury him, right? He doesn't even get a good kvura. What is that? Right, so we'll run into all kinds of things like this in Kohelis. When we do, Chazal explains some of these things metaphorically. What kind of family doesn't give their father a kfura? A family where they fight bitterly over his assets, that's like a man who didn't get a kfura. You see it? Yeah, they don't accept his ruling or something, and there's lawsuits, and the kids are fighting for years and years afterwards, and they're not talking to one another, right? So that's a man who didn't get a kfura. The kids can't even sit shiva together, you know. Okay, so just understand that some of Kohelis has to be explained metaphorically. At the end of chapter 4, he talks about, get this, a king who doesn't know how to be careful anymore. He doesn't know how to guard himself anymore. And he succumbs to another king who was not born into kingship. He was not born into dynasty, and he takes over the kingdom. So on the face of it, it looks like Shaul and David. Right? Mibes ha'asurim yotzalim lo. He was chased, he was imprisoned, he was forced to flee. That sounds like David, who ended up taking over the kingdom. No, it's Yeravam ben Nevat who's going to take over my kingdom. Right? That's the metaphor of the end of chapter 4. And by the way, if you open up your open up to the very first pasuk.
Kohelis.
Divrei Kohelis, pitgamei nevuah, because the Targum wants to make sure that whoever reads my work understands that this book belongs in the Bible, it's prophetic, right? But get ready. The Targumim to all Chamesh Megillos, right? Look on any page, is a far cry from the simple pshat of the pasuk. Right? Where do you see Divrei Kohelis? Just say, Pitgamei de Kohelis. No, Pitgamei Nevua dit Nabe Kohelis. Hu Shlomo Bar David Malko Dehava Birushalayim. Now look at pasuk Bet in the Targum. Kad Chaza Shlomo Malko de Yisrael Baruch Nevua. When Shlomo saw with a prophetic vision, Yasmalchus Rechavam Berei, he saw the kingdom of his son, the Osid Liispalga im Yeravam Bar Nevat. You can turn the page, maybe. No, it's same. Okay, that that my kingdom is going to be split and given to Yeravam Bar Nevat by Yerushalayim who based Makdasha the Inu Nasidim Mechrav, and as a result, everything I put into this base of Mikdash is one day going to be destroyed. Right? Isn't that how all things end? There's no business that can last in perpetuity. The question is, can you get out when you're still on top? Right? Everything comes to an end, no? Even kingdoms come to an end. No, I think God's temple should stand in perpetuity. Yeah, if we obey God, if we stay moral, listen to his Torah. Anyway, when he saw prophetically that this will come to an end, he said, what's the point of anything? To be your late larik, to give birth to children who are not going to outlive? What's the point? Right? So you see, the end of chapter 4, which plugs into this king that takes over from a previous king who doesn't know how to guard himself anymore, right? On the face of it, it looks like Shaul giving over to David, but it's not. It's Shlomo giving over, Rechavam giving over to Yeravam. Okay? You get it? An interesting thing that Shlomo himself sees where this is going because there is the Gemara in Maseches Yuma points to a particular act in David's life that sealed the fate of a split kingdom. Can you think of it? Where did David say, split it? And then a heavenly voice comes out and says, split it? Split the kingdom. Do you know your Shmuel Bet?
Not well enough.
Okay. It's Shmuel Bet. It's in the Merit of Avshalom, where Siva, the servant of Mephibosheth, Shaul's grandson, Yonasan's son, who David was taking care of, Siva accused Mephibosheth of wanting to take over the kingdom, hoping that David and Avshalom would kill each other, and that he becomes the next king. It's absolute Lashon Hara. The Gemara in Shabbos that absolves David of everything with Bathsheba says, but he's punished for accepting the Lashon Hara of Siva. When he told Siva, split the field, this is Gemara in Yuma Daf Chaf Beis, a heavenly voice came out and said, split the kingdom. If it's so easy for you to just use the fiat of your monarchical powers to just say split the kingdom without making an inquiry whether he's saying the truth or not, that Kabbalah Lashon Hara is what took down David's kingdom. It's part of the Gemara that says called Omer David Chata in the Walatoa. Right? David didn't sin with Bathsheba. He didn't sin with the counting of Bnei Israel at the end of Shmuel Bet, but he accepted Lashon Hara. That we're not going to absolve. Amazing piece of morality, by the way, right? Okay? Can't explain away his acceptance of the Lashon Hara. So when he says, split the field, split the kingdom. Where else can you think of a Maimar Chazal where now Shlomo saying split something causes the same thing? When he's confronted with a court case about a baby, he says, split the baby, and everyone, oh, he's going to cut the baby in half. What gives you the right to even make people think that you would do such a thing? Because I'm not happy with that. In fact, there's a sefer on Haftoros called Chazon HaMikra, Yisachar Yaakovson, that suggests that, you know, that story is the Haftorah of Parshas Miketz on the very rare occasion when Miketz is not Hanukkah. Right? Happens 4 or 5 times a century. So, when that happens, Miketz is the story of Shlomo cutting the baby in half. Now, it's true that story begins with a dream, and Miketz also begins with a dream. But there are lots of dreams in Tanakh, or in Nevi'im. The connection is that Yosef went too far with his brothers, and therefore lost Malchus. Of course the Melech should be from Yosef. He is Melech! Why does he give it to Yehuda? Because Yehuda challenges him. If you go too far with Malchus, it's the one who challenges you who will get the Malchus. You should have backed down earlier. Right? So too, Shlomo, you went too far making people think you would cut a human being in half. I don't care what your purpose was. You don't have that power. You shouldn't have that power. It's going to be split from you. And it's the same sort of, the same destiny that was once it's done by David and Shlomo. Rechavam's going to do the same. Acting impetuously with the people's offer. Lower taxes, and we'll continue to serve you. He was convinced to call the bluff, and they did. That's what this first Targum is about. It's how did Shlomo know that he's locked into that? Because I know my father behaved that way, and I behaved that way. My son's going to behave that way too. So I see Havel Havelim HaKol Havel. That's the end of chapter 4 of Koheles. You want to see me sticking inside? Pasuk Yud Gimel. Tov Yeled Miskein B'Chacham Melech Zokenu Ksil Shelo Yodali Yizohero. There's a young one, even though he's in big sakana, but there's an old king who's acting foolishly. He doesn't know how to guard himself anymore. Can be based on Surim Yitzalim Loch. The young child leaves incarceration or fear of life in order to become king. Ki Gamba Malchusono like Rush. He was not born into kingship. He was born poor. Right? And I know that young one is going to take over. What's interesting is that the last pasuk in Perek Dalet says, "Shmor raglecha kasher telech al beis elokim v'karov lishmor miteisak simim zevach." He gives advice about making sure to go to God's house and not listening to the fools. Right? What was one of the first things Yeravam did when he took over the 10 tribes? He sealed off the opportunity for people to go to the Mikdash. So you see that connects? If this is all prophetic, the Targum says that everything here is Shlomo's connection to the things that happened, and therefore it's metaphorical statements for those futuristic events. So that's what we have. Okay? You see, it says, look at first Targum in the Sefer. All right, now, just back to the beginning of Perek Dalet for a moment, where he makes some astounding claims, and he says, Shabeach ani es ha-meisim shekvar meisu min ha-chayim asher hem ha-chayim adena. He told me, Shnei ha-meis asher aden lo haya. Better to be dead than to be alive. It doesn't mean that he is advocating suicide. No. Yirmiyahu also says, "V'nivchar v'mavas mechayim," you will choose death over life. Right? I've spoken on occasion to Holocaust survivors, people who were in Auschwitz. They said, you know, we weren't depressed in Auschwitz. No, it was not depression. We just knew we had to spend every living survival instinct, every ounce of the strength we didn't have to just survive. Survive another day to tell this story one day. Obviously, I'm talking to a survivor. The 9 out of 10 that didn't survive, I'm not talking to. Right? But here he's saying that death would be welcome. You would choose it, but you're not going to act on it. The first thing you need to ask anybody who is engaged, who expresses suicidal thoughts, is find out if they have a plan already. Starting to think about how to do it. Right? I'm not saying to choose death over life is a bad, you know, is gone to a particular level also, but it reaches absolute emergency levels where you need to call 911 if the person is thinking of a plan. I'm not saying that that's what Perek Dalet and Koheles or Yirmiyahu Ches, where he says v'nivchar mavest mechayim. I'm not saying that that's what they're talking about. The question is, further in Chazal, on the famous Gemara in Erevin, where one day it says they went up to the Beis Medrash and they said, is it better to be born or not to be born? Right? Which is a silly academic question because anyone you're talking to is already born. So who are you going to ask? You're asking people who are already born. So what's the conclusion? Remember that Gemara concludes?
Better
not to be born. And that is actually in part of the Yom Kippur liturgy. Familiar with it? It says Nimnu v'gamru, better not to be born. Let's go on. It's in the Musaf, Yom Kippur Musaf. So ask the Marsha, what does this mean? What on earth is going on here? How do you possibly think that we can get away a Talmudic discussion? And it says Nimnu v'gamru, which seems to mean like elsewhere in Shas. They took a reckoning. They had 800 Talmidim in the Beis Medrash. 600 said better not to be born. 200 said better to be born. Okay, we have our conclusion. So the Marsha gives you, you're going to enjoy this. The Marsha says that Nimnu v'gamru doesn't mean they counted, they took a vote. They counted the mitzvahs of the Torah. Not the Torah. They said, we know there are 613 mitzvahs. 365 lo sase, 248 hase. It's a landslide. Right? It's about 64. Wow. Well, I mean, the Gemara at the end of Yuma says, mitzvah sase inculcate love, mitzvah lo sase is meant to inculcate fear. If love is so much greater than fear, why are you telling me so many los ases? Give me 600 ases to show my intense love, and just give me 12, 13 los ases. 12, 13 los ases that to avoid, really big ones to avoid. Okay. So So that is that's the Masha's question. He says, Nimnu Gamru, they counted and saw, based on this mix, so many Molosa says, you know, it must be a lot easier to be a Rosh than to be a Tzaddik. You have to work so hard at gaining a reputation of being righteous, and you can destroy it all with one act of indiscretion. Right? As opposed to the opposite, where someone could be wicked all his life, and then he's Kona Olamo with one act. You know, there's Gemaras and the Daf Yomi just had a few days ago. It says, Rebbe read that story and cried. He says, if someone can purchase his Olam Haba with one act, you can also lose it with one act. Right? You have to always be on your guard. Right? I mean, it could be one extremely crazy, stupid act, but right, we're okay staying away from that. But you know, you never know. You do one thing, and this one leads to another, and it's a simple plan at start. But then it gets a little crazy, and it snowballs, and... You have to always be on your guard and recognize that the wolf is at the door. What I mean by that? You never know. Be on guard. Gemara says, one Rebbe said, when Talmud said to his Rebbe, he's walking, let's walk right in front of that Beis Zunus and get schar for not walking in. And the Rebbe said, don't test me. If we walk in front, maybe we just might go walk in. Right? So Lamaisa, it's better to be born since we're here. But since it's so much easier, Yetzelev Hodam Ra Minu Rav, our nature is to be selfish, right? It doesn't say Yetzelev Hodam Rosha Minu Rav, it's Ra Minu Rav. Because if I were to describe a newborn baby to you, right, and tell you the 10 things that this newborn baby does, but say that that's what a 20-year-old does, I would say that that's bad. I wouldn't call it wicked. You can't call a newborn baby wicked. He cries when he's hot, he cries when he's cold, he cries when he's wet, he cries when he's hungry, he cries when he's thirsty. He cries when there's too much noise, he cries when there's too much light, he cries when there's anything that disrupts his comfort. And he doesn't even tell you what it is he's crying about. Right? He does give you some cuteness and some joy, okay, fair enough. But most of the time he behaves in very unacceptable ways. You are such a baby, you four-day-old. So what you would tell if a 20-year-old behaved that way, or even a 3-year-old maybe, at some point you've got to teach this child that there are people besides you in this world. We're born selfish. We're not born. Selfish is bad. It's not wicked, necessarily. Right? So since it's so much easier to just stay as we are, right? So maybe it's better not to be born, and that's what Kohelis is talking about here in Perek Dalet, okay? I'll leave you with that. Perek Hey. Okay, turn to the beginning of Perek Hey. What in any Mikros Gedolos catches your eye in the beginning of Perek Hey? Turn to the very first page of Perek Hey. Really? That's Perek Hey in your book? Yeah. Al Tvahel, Al Picha? All right, then turn the page to the next page. Okay, our tour is the daf is one off. Is that Ibn Ezra has this crazy long Perush to Perek Hey of Koheles. Just to be aware of, I wrote it down here, it says Ibn Ezra al-Piyut. This is where Ibn Ezra chooses in his Perush to whatever he wrote on. He didn't write on, we don't have his Perush to all the books of Tanakh. We don't have Ibn Ezra on Sefer Shoftim, for instance. But he chooses to write about Piyut. You know, the poems that people were writing at the time? There was such a proliferation of poems at that time. Some shall say Piyutim for Dalit Parshios. Familiar with that? Someone Yom Tovim. Right? So, in the time of Rashi, they used to have Piyutim for every Parsha. Every Parsha. Long Piyutim to poetically describe the Parsha. And it took a lot of time of the davening. Rashi seems to make a compromise. He says, let's just say on the Dalit Parshios, Shabbos HaGadol, and the Yom Tovim. But let's not do it every Shabbos. Ibn Ezra here tells us all that he finds wrong with Piyutim. It's a little disingenuous. He wrote plenty of Piyutim himself. Right? His objection that they're not grammatical, they're not halachic sometimes, you know, they take liberties. ostensibly his didn't, but you know, but he wrote lots of piyutim too. But this is just saying is that he talks about the various sodos involved in the piyutim. The Rama says you should maintain the minhag of saying piyutim, but the problem is when you have a shul where not even one person wants to say them, because of all the people who grew up with them in the 1920s are no longer here. So what are you going to do? It's really tough to get it because you're saying long piyutim and add 20 minutes to the davening. Shabbos Shkolim has not only shachar, it has musaf too. And everyone is talking to their heart's content. I mean, even in shtiklach, because they're not saying it. And the chazanim are not prepared with it, so they make all kinds of mistakes. Even a seasoned chazan is bound to make mistakes, because they're in and out of the dot of the train. You have to go from one sitter to the other, back and forth. But no sitter is printed with the piyut that goes right into the text. The piyutim are added to the end of each bracha in the Shemona Esrei. So, and who said that we can interrupt Shemona Esrei like that anyway? Because the Rokeach said, because the Rukh Chosid said, because the Ashkenazim said. If you go to Broyers, you know where they say Slichas? And they say 20 minutes of slichas, half hour of slichas.
During the
Salat Shema Esrei,
or just during
the Shema? No, public Shema Esrei, and then the Chazan finishes, right? Ostensibly, he doesn't say Tachanun, but he finishes, and then he goes back. Wait, makes sense. The Gemara of Zara, the Ches says you should add whatever you're saying into that particular bracha. Some shul say it before davening, some say that. The minute is to say it by Hashkama, so you say it before davening. Okay, just saying. This is where Ibn Ezra talks about all that. And, okay? So at the bottom, I wrote one of the contradictions that you find in Zer Kavod's introduction to Koheles in the Das Mikra. It says, Ohev Kesef lo yispa Kesef. And later on, he says, HaKesef yaneh es hakol. What makes sense of that? Kesef answers it. All right, you can say he's saying that second thing with guile, right? If I say, Ohev Kesef lo yispa Kesef, means the more you love money, the more you're never satiated with money. And now I'm telling you, HaKesef yaneh es hakol. But if you want your answers, you ever hear the Yiddish saying, Berhot de meya, hot de deya? Whoever waves the Franklin, he gets his opinion. He gets to state his opinion. All right? Okay, just saying. All right, so plus, think of a Maimar Chazal. Tzadikim chavivim mamonam yoser migufam. Tzadikim like their money more than their bodies. That bother you? It shouldn't. Rishayim love their bodies much more than their money. They spend all their money enjoying their bodies. A tzaddik likes his money more than his body, because the tzaddik doesn't indulge his body. A tzaddik uses his money to build a hospital, to build a base medrash, to care of aniyim, to do chesed. He loves his money more than his body. You get it? A rasha loves his body much more than his money. He spends all his money on his body. He amasses money so that he can spend it on his body. It's a famous joke. This guy he's going into his Porsche and he gets sideswiped by a car. And he goes, oh, I can't believe it. That guy ripped the door off my car. I can't believe it. And then the police officer says, what are you talking about? He also ripped off your hand down to your wrist. So he looks and says, oh no, my Rolex. He took my Rolex. So that guy loves his money more than his body. Okay, I understand. I get that. But still, that's that maimer. Okay, if you turn the page, you have the chaver in front of you? Do you have it here?
I forgot to bring it today.
Oh, okay. All right. So, this parakeh is where we have just the reason for Ibn Ezra's objections to the piyutim. He says they're written in languages most people don't understand. They're praying these things instead of the main prayers that we would that Dan Shiknes as a Gadola wrote for us, right? Well, they're praying in addition, right? And it's such a mixture of lashon. They make up words. Of course, course, that's known as poetic license. Yeah, but we shouldn't be davening with poetic license, right? And he says there are great mistakes in diktuk, right? Of course, they make no words. Plus, ein mikuyev tzimidei pshuto. Why do we have to daven with chidos and riddles? Right? Now, the fact is, I love trying to figure out piyutim. I give shiurim in, you know, Rosh Hashanah time and all these piyutim that, you know, and they're really making good, especially on Tisha B'Av, you can figure out what all these things are referring to, because they're usually some kind of reconfiguration of a pasuk in Tanakh, and if you know what the pasuk is, now you have svarim that point these things out to you. Right? Okay. All right. Perek Hey, after telling us about first of all, why does he say this in the beginning of Perek Hey? Because he says, "Listen, you're just on earth. God is up in the Shemayim," which means he sees the big picture. You don't. After Eov, in his book, begs God for his day in court. Right? Remember? And finally, God comes down to talk to him and tell him, "Listen, Eov, let me tell you about the cosmos. Let me tell you about creation. Let me tell you about the nature of this universe." He takes him up into the whirlwind. It's Moshe. Eov is written by Moshe. And God tells him not one iota, not one word about his own personal suffering, which is what he was asking for. And then God puts him down, back down on earth, and he says, basically what God was doing was to explain to him the great chasm between man and God, not about your personal situation. And then Eov is satisfied with that. Okay, God, yeah, I have no more questions. You floored me. Okay. So, because I'm just down here on earth, I don't see the big picture. If you go to the Science Museum in Queens, you know, when you walk in the door, you see a picture like the size of this wall, gibberish, absolute gibberish. And then it says, go to the other side of this great auditorium, it's about 400 feet away, and then look at the same picture. It's a picture of Abraham Lincoln. That's mamish gibberish, 10, 15, 20, 30 feet away. Right? Sometimes you need distance. You need to be further away to understand what Yirmiyahu was about, and Chesed was about. The Holocaust, okay. Who's going to try to explain that? Right? I see Jeff Gurak just wrote a book about what would American Jewry be like today if there was no Holocaust. How does he get rid of the Holocaust? Hitler is assassinated in 1938. No Holocaust. No war against the Jews in Europe. Right? And he writes from, you know who he is? Jeff Gurak? He teaches at Revel in Stern. A really great historian of the American Jewish situation. He shows that the world is for Jews. There's no Israel. America is a hotbed of anti-Semitism, to say nothing of Europe and Africa, and there's hardly any place on earth where Jews can escape. Only now, it's not just Europe where they're after us. It's the whole world where they're after us. And no place to go. That's what he writes. In other words, is he a religious man trying to tell us, don't ask God why there was a Holocaust? This is what it was. This was the natural progression of 900 years of Christian anti-Semitism where they wouldn't stand up for us. The Nazis were going to go after Christianity right after the Jews. They went after the Jews not because we were Untermenschen. We were more intelligent than everybody else. They went after us because we would not allow their new morality, which was going to kill off the weak, which is what they started doing. Hitler writes, Mahashmoy writes in his early writings, the Jews won't let me do what I want to do because of their morality and their conscience. They'll make the world feel guilty that I'm doing, that I'm killing off all of the mental retards and I'm getting rid of the Untermenschen. People don't deserve to live. How can they deserve to live? They don't produce anything for society. They only take, take, take. I want people who are going to contribute to society. So that resonated with post-World War I Germany. Right? So the Jew was antithetical to my 1,000-year dream. Okay. All right, so after he speaks about the big picture of Chapter 5, remember that, that's an important point of Chapter 5, he talks about Nedarim. Keep your word. Keep your promises. Okay? And he says, better to not make a neder than to make it and not keep it. Good Shabbos. Thank you. Better to not make a nezer than to make it and not keep it. So comes the Gemara in Maseches Cholin to say, right, this is Pasuk Dalet. So comes the Gemara in Cholin to say that it's even better to not make a nezer than to make it and keep it. Don't make nedarim. This is a dispute in the Talmud of whether the nazir is doing something positive or something negative. Maybe even be a machlokus about the nature of the word itself. Is the nun shorashi, where his long hair becomes like a nazir, like a crown? Or is the nun not part of the shorash and the shorash is zor, to be estranged, which I don't want you to be? Right? Right, so and he says in Pasuk Zion, if you see oppression, right? If you see oppression and you see that there's no righteousness, there's no justice, don't be so amazed. There's someone on top of this, and he's a shomer. Right? In other words, you will run into injustice. Miscarriage of justice. But know that there's a shomer who allowed that to happen for whatever the reason is. We don't know. Maybe it was something that happened 500 years ago. Big picture again, right? But there's a shomer. The shomer is God. There's always a shomer on top. Okay? Pasuk Tes is where it says, Oy kesef lo yisba kesef. We talked about the different approaches of kesef in this book. Right? Is it good? Is it bad? What does it mean that the tzaddik loves his money more than his body? Right? We'll discuss that. Okay? Now, I told you a little while before, looking at Perek Vav, where it says, if a person gives birth, he has 100 children. Perek Vav plus a Gimel. There's 100 children. And he lives many years. And he lives a full life. And they don't even give him a burial. Who could imagine such a thing? A man who has 100 children, lives a long life, and they don't bury him? What do they do? They just leave him out in the street? And what is the Metzius? All right, how can we explain that Vav Gimel through Vav and Metzius? So I just said that to you before, about a family that they fight over his assets is not giving him a kfura. Yeah, they have a big kfura for him, and they give him a lot of kavod, and they take out the second floor in Riverside, chapels, and they give him a nice big funeral. But things they do afterwards might actually remove that. Okay, that's all I'm doing in Perek Vav. I close with some words from Perek Zion. And my intention next class is to finish Kohelis and then move on to Eicha, and then we'll do Esther in time for Purim. So there's a number of toves. It's better, shame tov is better than, right? Tov, shame, yishemen tov. That's just a pun. Shame, shemen. Shemen means your reputation, your perfume, what emanates from you. Right? Okay, but your name is your reputation. No, I mean, the shemen just is the superficial things that come out of you. What you dress like, or what. Reputation is much more important than the car you drive. And anyone thinks that the car you drive, or the tie you wear, or whatever else is more important, or helps you with your reputation, is making a mistake. Those things are minimal. And if you live in a world where those things are your reputation, you're living in the wrong world. But here, Ketov Yom HaMoves MiYom HiVoldo. Better is the day of death than the day of birth. Oh, back to that. So the Medrash in Kohelis Rabbah compares it to like a ship. The ship leaving dock is the baby born. The ship coming back in is dying. The ship is coming in, you're going, you know, getting off the boat. Right? So it says when a ship leaves the dock, everyone is, you know, they break a glass against the back of the ship, and they're all thrilled, and they all say, well, go back. And the ship comes in, no one knows about it, and no one comes to greet the ship. They only come to bid farewell to the ship. So when someone's born, everyone's having a mazel tov and having a party and having a bris and everything, right? When someone dies, not so much. And it says it shouldn't be that way. When the ship leaves the dock, we don't know what it's accomplishing. We don't know if it's going to prove it's going to sink in another week before it even gets to its destination, or is successful at its destination. But when the ship comes in, you know, you've probably heard many a hesped that mentions this. That's what we're doing now. We're talking about what the ship did, what successes this ship had, what it accomplished. Right? So that's what all these things are. They're meant to enhance the human experience. This one that says, Tov lelechas al beis evil, milechas al beis mishnah. Better to go to the house of mourning than to the house of a mishnah. Not because you will help the mourner more than you will help the sherev brachas. Although that is a halacha. If you can either do only one or the other, right? Then you go to the evil first. If you do both, if you can do both, I think the halacha says go to the sherev brachas first. They may need a minyan, they may need other things on the spot. The evil, if you have afterwards, to go to do that afterwards. All right, maybe this may. Here it says, not because of your utility, what are you going to accomplish at these two places. No, v'achayitena libo, it's better for you. You get it? It's better for you at this place. You'll do better if you go to the Beis Eved. Right? Tov kas nischok, really? Kibro panim yitav lev? It's sort of like the Gemara saying, it's better to have a bad dream than a good dream. A bad dream will get you thinking. A good dream will just make you feel good for the moment. That's what this book is about. It's a bad dream. It's coming to help you make good on the inevitable problems that will come. And it reminds you again and again to think of the end of things. Sof davar kol nishma. There will always be a good ending. If you have God by your side, with you, I have everything. Without you, I have nothing. And, important, gather around yourself people where you can say that about them too. A good wife, you know. Maran Bracha says, a beautiful wife, beautiful Kalim, and a beautiful Dira enhances our self-esteem so that we can deal with all of life's inevitable problems. Right? That's why it says, Tov achris dava, pasuk ches, mereishi sof. The end of things is better than the beginning of things. Right? Okay, the end of things is better than the beginning of things. Okay, that's where we'll end for today. Okay, we're see if you can review, make sure that, you know, look at this, because everything is, and I've been following very scrupulously the